Hey everybody, Jeff here, and I am happy to report that Your Move is expanding our TV broadcast to a brand new city. And it's not just any city. It's the city that performs an average of 315 weddings per day. It's the city that shines brighter than any other city on Earth, when seen from outer space. It's the city that never uses dice with rounded corners. It's the city that never sleeps. Figured it out? That's right. Your Move is now airing on NBC after Saturday Night Live in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we could not be more excited. And we have you to thank. Your continued support and financial generosity is helping us reach more people in more cities. So from Andy and everyone on the Your Move team, thank you. Now, we realize this question may seem rhetorical, but do you have friends or family in Las Vegas whose lives would change if they started making better decisions? If so, perhaps you could help them find Your Move, now airing on NBC after SNL. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to continue with Andy's fourth message in a six-part series, Ask It. We all look for excuses to tell ourselves yes when we should tell ourselves no. In this episode, Andy Stanley explains that there's a difference between not wrong and right.
The name of the series is Ask It, and we've said the subtitle is that this is the question that answers just about everything. One single question we're talking about for 6 weeks, and we believe this is the question that answers just about everything, and we're all going to say the question together because I want this to be so etched in your thoughts that this becomes the filter for every invitation, every decision, every opportunity that comes out, that comes your way. And the question is, say it with me, what's the... Yeah, one more time with a little bit more enthusiasm. What's the... Okay, we said that we kind of fleshed this thing out. We've looked at it through from three different perspectives. And we said that when we ask this question, we can't just rush by it. We need to ask it this way. In light of my past experience, my current circumstances, my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do, or what is the wise thing for me to do? In light of my past experience, because my past didn't like yours and yours didn't like mine, in light of my current circumstances, which change all the time, my current stage of life, in light of my future hopes and dreams, and your future hopes and dreams are unique to you. So today, we're going to take this question and apply it to one specific area of your life. To sort of get us there, kind of want to set this up. Isn't it true that when you're tempted to do something you know you shouldn't do, isn't it amazing how you have like these self-conversations and you talk yourself into it? I mean, the truth is, your greatest regrets, you were there for it, right? Your greatest regrets, you were there right before it and right after. You were there for the whole thing. It's not like you woke up. Well, some of you woke up, but for the most part, most of us were like conscious and, you know, just sober enough to experience the whole thing. And we saw what we were about to do coming and we're like, well, you know, I probably should, and I shouldn't call her back, and I shouldn't go, and I shouldn't stay, and I shouldn't take that job. And we, you know, you kind of knew. And then what did you start doing? We all do this. You start talking yourself into a dumb decision. And then you look back and you go, how could I have been so dumb? And or how could I have been so stupid? Or why didn't I see that coming? And you were there the whole time. And you talked yourself into something that you now regret. And here's how we do it. We talk ourselves into it by saying, well, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with. And then the next thing we know, we've done something wrong. And we went, well, that was really wrong. But all the way right up to the line where we did the wrong thing, we excused it and excused it and excused it. So here's something we've all learned as adults to kind of get our head around today's idea, and that's this. It's a bad idea to assume that if something's not wrong, then it's right. It's a bad idea to assume, well, if there's nothing wrong with it in general, then it's right for me. If there's nothing wrong with it in general for the general population, then I should assume it's the right thing for me. That's a bad idea, and all of us have lived long enough to do that. Now, here's the thing. If you're a Christian, a Jesus follower, you have been commanded through the New Testament. You have been commanded to live above mere right and wrong. You've been commanded to ask this better question, not is it right, not is it wrong, but is it the wise thing to do? Because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble doing things that just aren't wrong. Now, if you're not a Christian or a Jesus follower, you have been invited by God who loves you to ask this question and to live above mere right and wrong. Now, today, I want to take this big, broad question, a lot of my past experience, current circumstances, future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? And I want to apply it to your moral decisions, the decisions that relate to your sexuality and expressions of your sexuality, whether you're dating, married, in between, divorced, straight, gay, it doesn't matter. Anything to do with your sexuality, I want to apply this question to that area of your life. That's why it's going to be fun for me and uncomfortable for you, okay? Now, here's what we know. Okay, listen, we're all adults. We can jump into this pretty deep. Here's what we know. Bad moral decisions, and this is very important what I'm about to say. If you're not a church person, please don't read anything churchy into anything I'm about to say. I'm not asking you to adhere to a certain moral standard. We're not talking about that today. I'm not asking you to be like a good person, like a good Christian person. If you're a Christian, you should be. If you're not a Christian, you have your own standards. So when I say bad moral decisions, I'm just talking about when you look back and you have regrets in terms of, you know, things that were sexual. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, you're bad the way that you define bad. You define it any way you want to today, okay? Not every weekend, but today, all right? Here we go. So bad moral decisions are generally preceded by a series of unwise decisions. And how do we get there? We got there with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with. There's nothing wrong with having lunch with her. We work together. People have lunch all the time. I remember one time when I was a kid, the pastor came over for lunch. So even pastors have lunch. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with lunch. And there's nothing wrong with dinner. Okay, we worked late, you know, and you know, my wife wasn't home, my husband wasn't home, and everybody was kind of going out, and there were like six or seven of us, and we got to the restaurant, and the other five just didn't show up. It was just the two of us, you know, but there's, come on, whoa. Are you telling me there's something wrong with eating dinner? Okay, then shut up. There's nothing wrong with dinner, right? And there's nothing wrong with working late together. Our team works together all the time. And you know, there's nothing wrong with working late together. And there's nothing wrong with confiding in her. I mean, there's things that are kind of tough at home. And, you know, we started talking. Next thing you know, I'm just telling her what's going on in my marriage and things aren't great. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with confiding in a friend. It saves you money. I could either go to a counselor and spend $100 an hour, or I could confide in her. So this is good stewardship. I think it's God's will. And she's such a good listener. Speaking of listening, there's nothing wrong with listening. I'm just a shoulder to cry on. I'm just a listener. I'm just listening. There's nothing wrong with listening. And there's nothing wrong with dropping by. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, my family, we'd all be in the car together. And my dad would say, hey, let's go drop by. So my parents taught me to drop by. So there's nothing wrong with dropping by. And you know what? I heard he wasn't feeling good or didn't show up at work or things. So I just decided to drop by. And come on, there's nothing wrong with a hug. Come on. Are you telling me, wait. You're telling me there's something wrong with a hug? Or let's make it more personal. It's not something on television. This is a friend of yours. And you're watching this thing play out. And you know, you heard about lunch, you heard about dinner, and you found out they worked late together and everybody else was gone. It was just the two of them. And so you're like, gosh, I feel like I need to say something. So you kind of bring it up, and he says or she says, hey, whoa, Mr. Judgmental, Miss Judgmental, there's nothing wrong with. And you're thinking, you're right. There's nothing wrong with it, but it just doesn't seem right. Or let's get real personal. This is you. It always gets quiet at that point in the message. I don't know what's up. Yeah. Here's the thing. Okay, because I love you. You, come on, we're all good at this. You just lie to yourself. Now, you lie to everybody else if they bring it up. But before you lie to everybody else, before you're dishonest with everybody else, before you're not transparent with everybody else, come on, we're friends. You're not even transparent with you. You have a hard time admitting what anybody on the outside can see happening. That's why I say bad moral decisions. You define this any way you want. I'm not trying to narrow it down. Bad moral decisions are generally preceded by a series of unwise decisions. So we get closer to the edge and closer to the edge and closer to the edge. And then somebody calls us on it. We go, hey, I haven't done anything. The edge is, I got another foot. I'm fine. And closer to the edge, and then somebody says, I haven't done anything. And you're right, you haven't done anything. But they just see where this is going. Now, this is very important what I'm gonna say in case you checked out. Just listen to this part. Real quick, look. Living on the edge is fine if you're counting calories. Okay? In other words, if you got a certain number of calories you can eat in a day, I recommend you eat them all. Okay, you just max out your calorie count, okay? If we're talking about you're supposed to be home at midnight, then get home right at midnight. Don't come home at 11:30. Use all those 30 minutes to do whatever thing you're doing and get home right at midnight. You know, if you're supposed to be at work at 8 in the morning, don't get there at 7. Get there at 8. I mean, just take it right up to the edge, right? But come on. When it comes to moral things, when it comes to relational things, when it comes to the expressions of your sexuality, there are certain lines, once you cross them, it just creates extraordinary regret and extraordinary complexity. And you already know this. We all have a story or 10 that we could tell, don't we? So with all that in mind, I know I say this all the time, and it's because I just don't know what else to say. But listen, if there is a God who loves you, and if there is a God who cares so much about you that God would say, I know this isn't the perfect picture for you, but I want you to think of me as a heavenly perfect father. If there is a God who's created you, and as the Old Testament says, if there's a God who has a future for you, and as the New Testament says, if there is a God who knows your name and cares about you, then what would we expect God to say on this subject? Go for it. Walk the line. Be careful. No. We would expect him to say what any good parent would say to their 17-year-old daughter or their 17-year-old son, which is, hey, not so close. So the Apostle Paul, writing to a group of brand new Christians in the city of Corinth, and you read much about Corinth, or even if you just read Paul's letters to the Corinthians, I'm telling you, there was stuff going on in that church that would just, it was unbelievable. I mean, it's almost you couldn't even talk about it in church, and it was happening in their church. So this is a very secular audience who believes Jesus is the Son of God, that he rose from the dead, that he's their savior, and they're trying to figure out, you know, how do you be like an ex-pagan Christian? You know, they grew up going to a temple where prostitution was encouraged, and now Paul's saying, I don't know about that. So they're trying to figure it out. And so Paul is writing to this audience from a culture not too different than ours in terms of culture, and he's trying to figure out, okay, how do I tell these new Christians, okay, you're just gonna hurt yourself. So here's what he says, and these words that many of us believe are inspired by God are so relevant for all of us. Here's what he says on the topic. He says, flee from sexual immorality. In other words, don't flirt with it. Don't see how close you can get without fill in the blank, you know. How close can I get to fill in the blank without fill in the blank, you know. He says, flee. It's a little Greek word that means run away, okay. Get as far from as possible. Now, here's the thing. Here's where we all agree. This is what every husband wants his wife to do. This is what every wife wants her husband to do. This is what everybody in a serious relationship wants their partner to do. This is what every parent wants their teenage son and daughter to do. In fact, this is what every 17-year-old boy wants his 13-year-old sister to do. So to some degree, we're all hypocrites because we know this is good for the people we love. But for sometimes, we're not so sure it's good for us. The Apostle Paul makes a comment that is so ahead of his time. It took about 1500 or 1600 years for psychologists and therapists to figure this out. Actually longer, I'm just kind of trying to be conservative. It took a couple thousand years for us to stumble upon the reality of what he said. This is in the Bible, written 2000 years ago. He says this, flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits, and now just want to make sure I don't lose you, you can define sins any way you want, and anything that you would consider to be immoral, you can put it in this category. Anything that you would consider a guy should never, a woman should never, that he should never, a person should never, you define it any way you want. Paul says this, that all other sins a person commits, in other words, Paul says, this is huge, sexual sin is like no other category of sin. Sexual sin is in a category all of its own. There ain't nothing like it, is what Paul says. Now, you know what's so interesting about that? Is that people who do what I do and people who spend a lot of time with people who are trying to overcome their past would tell you that when somebody walks in the office with extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary regret and extraordinary guilt and complex things that they're trying to work through, 90% of the time, there's something sexual involved. People move on from all kinds of other things, but things sexual just seem to stick
around
and stay with us. And part of it is this, we've said this before, is because we live in a culture like Paul's culture that thinks sex and sexuality is just physical. It's just physical, it's just physical, it's just physical. And then eventually we realize, you know what? I don't think it was just physical. I think somehow this affected my soul, it affected my heart, it affected my conscience, it affected the way I view myself, it affected the way I view other women, the way I view other men. All of a sudden I realized this wasn't an isolated event that I could say, hey, remember when you graduated from high school? It's not like that. It's bigger than that, it's deeper than that. And eventually we all come to that conclusion. And Paul says 2,000 years ago, he says, look, every other sin a person commits, look what he says, every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but a person who sins sexually, they sin against their own body. He says, there's nothing like it. Now it's not worse, these aren't sins that are worse than all other sins, they're just unique in the way they impact a person. So Paul says, look, Corinth, Christians, 21st century Christians, because of this, because of what you know, you didn't need to read the Bible to know this. Because of your own past, because of your own confusion, because of the things you've had to overcome, because of things you've seen other people overcome. When it comes to morality and all things sexual, flee, as in run away from, as in stay far back from anything immoral. Now, not because it's not forgivable. This has nothing to do with forgiveness. In other words, sexual sin is not in a category all of its own because if God won't forgive it. In fact, it's in the New Testament. There's this precious, this incredible emotional story. You've heard it or read it, where Jesus, you know, encounters a woman who was actually caught in the act of adultery. And in that culture, they were going to stone her to death. And Jesus is the only one who extends forgiveness. And then he says to her, don't do that anymore. Stop doing that. I love you and accept you unconditionally. I love you so much, I gotta tell you something. Don't do that. Anyway, this is not a forgiveness issue, but I'll tell you what. Of all the sins, or all the activities, if you don't like the word sin, of all the behavior, if you don't like the word immorality, of all the behaviors that people have a hard time forgiving themselves for, things sexual are the things that people have a hard time forgiving themselves for. God forgives. God moves on. God accepts. God extends grace. But in this area, let's be honest, we have a very difficult time extending grace and forgiveness to ourselves. So God, who loves you, who's not against you, he's for you, says, come on. When it comes to this, don't allow a series of unwise decisions that you defend by saying there's nothing wrong with, to get you to the place where you step over a line that follows you potentially in your heart and your conscience, maybe physically, the rest of your life. The issue isn't forgiveness, the issue is consequence. So, at the end of this little passage, you know, Paul says, you know, flee sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits are outside the body, but the person who sins sexually sins against their own body. And then, this is so powerful, Paul lifts our eyes up to a higher standard. He says, look, when it comes to sexuality, when it comes to morality, when it comes to immorality, whether you're single, you know, whether you're married, whether you're straight, whether you're gay, whether you're a teenager, whether you're in a second marriage or coming out of a third marriage, it doesn't matter. He said, here is the standard that God followers. Here's the standard that people who say, I want to follow Jesus are to live with and to follow. Look, this is so powerful. He says, therefore, honor God with your bodies. Honor God with your body. Think about this. This is such a different standard than, well, is there anything wrong with? Is there anything wrong with? Is there anything wrong with? Is there a law against it? Will we get caught? Will there be a consequence? Is anybody going to get pregnant? Is there? He says, I have a better standard. What if the new filter for your sexual expressions were this? Will this be honoring to God? I know what you're thinking. You just took all the fun out of my whole life with that. Will this be honoring to God? Oh, Andy, I'll just stay at home the rest of my life. I mean, really? But think about it before you blow me off. Just think about this for a second. What would it look like to honor God with your body? Let me ask you another question. 10 years from now? Oh, no, that's too long, okay? 5 years from now? 1 year from now? 1 year from now, if you spend a year asking the question when it comes to all things moral and sexual, am I honoring God with my body? Do you think you'd have more or fewer regrets? Do you think you would be more unhealthy or more healthy? Do you think you would view yourself in a more healthy or unhealthy way? Do you think your relationships will be healthier or unhealthier? God's not against you. God's for you. Here's what God knows that you'll eventually learn. We all eventually learn this. God knows that you will never be happier than your relationships. And nothing complicates a relationship like sexualizing it. And so God, who loves you, says, come on, come on, come on. Just if you could, just step back and begin to ask the harder question. What's the wise thing to do? And if you want some real specifics, ask this question. How do I honor God with my body? In other words, instead of asking how close can I get, it's how do I honor God with my bod? We didn't misspell it. We just wanted to keep you awake. Okay, now, here's the thing, and you know this, okay? Come on, we're smart. We're tracking together. Culture, let me put it this way. Culture, and this is the problem. This is what makes this so difficult. Culture baits us to the edge of disaster morally and then chastises us when we step over certain lines. Think about this. Culture baits us to the edge. Every single television show you watch, every single movie, every single theme, every single book, there's something sexual and it's all just draws us up to the line, the way we're supposed to dress, the way we're supposed to act, the way we're supposed to dance, the way we're supposed to drink, the way everything in culture just draws us up to the edge of you know, immorality, however you define that, of just, you know, terrible decisions morally. And then it's so crazy. Culture baits us to the edge, and then when we step over certain lines, it chastises us. One of the things that I love is I've been teaching this for so many years, and many of you have heard me give you the 1 year challenge if you're single, to say, hey, if you really want to do something extraordinary in your relationship with God, take a year off dating. Just take a year off dating. Just mark it on your calendar. Just renew your mind. Just decide that I'm just saying no to that whole category for a year. And about every other week, I get a letter, like sometimes long letters. I get text. I get direct message. I get communication with people real now all over the world who say, Andy, I just finished my year. Just finished my year. I got a letter not too long ago from a guy who said, I just met a girl, and the way I heard about you is she watched this series you did, Love, Sex, and Dating, and she had just finished her year when we met. Thank you for teaching, because we would have never met otherwise. Thank you. It's a year. You go, year? You know what? You may not think this about you. Here's what I think about you. I think you're worth a year. I think your heart and your soul and your body, I think about you, is worth a year of your time. In light of your past experience, your current circumstances, okay? You just went through a tough divorce and there was no intimacy for a long time and you are ready. You know, and you got that new haircut, you know, and you lost some weight, and a little plastic surgery thrown in there, and you're looking good. You're ready to be back on the market. And you are so vulnerable. And right now you hate this message. And your heavenly Father who loves you says, whoa, 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 you're too vulnerable. Now's not the time. You go, yeah, but God, I haven't had sex and I don't even, and God's going, I know, I know. I made it. I created it. Once upon a time, there was no sex and I'd done everything else. And God said to himself, I have a great idea. And the angel said, what is it? He said, you wouldn't understand. You know what you need to do? You need to pre-decide and write it down. And here's why. About 8 to 10 years, studies come out that substantiate old studies, and they claim to be new studies that say, we've heard this 100 times, when you pre-decide and write it down, you are like 10 to 20 times more likely to follow through. If you will write a script, here's what I'm going to say when this occurs. Here's what I'm going to do when this occurs. Here's how I'm gonna respond when the invitation surfaces. You pre-decide and you write it down. How far are you gonna go? Where are you gonna go? Are you gonna move in? Are you not gonna move in? How long are you gonna wait? You need to pre-decide and write it down. And you will never, ever, ever regret that. Now, One last thing. I know what some of you think. You think, Andy, that's really cute and that was funny and I'm glad it's almost over, but obviously you live in a cave. They let you out on Sundays. Maybe you get an hour of internet, you know, so you can return email. Then they shut that thing off lest you learn what's going on in the rest of the world. I understand. So here's what you say. Andy, that's fine. But nobody else does this. Nobody else is living that way. Nobody else is waiting around. Nobody else is stepping back from the line. Nobody else is doing that. Now, this is really, really important, okay? This is even more important than the last thing I said was important. So this is super important, okay? That is a statement of fact. It is not an argument for or against anything. It's just a statement. Nobody else is. True. Let's just, nobody else is. What's your point? Well, nobody else is. Well, say it louder, but that's not an argument. That's just a statement. Andy, you're suggesting I do all these things that nobody else is. I'm like, yes, make a point. So let me help you. Here's what you're really saying. I want to kind of put some terms around this. What you're really saying is this, but nobody else is, and I want to be like everybody else. So since that's your objection, and since that's why some of you are going to walk out of here and go, ha, nobody does that, let me just help you. So I want us to say this out loud, because this is your objection, all right? So with some gusto, here we go. But nobody else is, and I... No, you don't. No, you don't. I want a marriage like everybody else. I want a second marriage like most of my... I want regret like everybody else's regret. I want to pass like everybody else's. No, you don't. Nobody spends their life just trying to be like the average person with the average marriage, with the average past and the average guilt and the average addiction and the average, you know, desires to go in ways that you later regret. Nobody does that. You, that's not what you want. But if you want what you say you want, you're gonna have to step back and do what very few people are doing so you can have the relationships that very few people enjoy. So, in light of your past experience, and we've all got one, in light of your current circumstances, your current stage of life, in light of your future hopes and dreams, and they are your future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do? You say, Andy, it's extreme. I think you're worth it. Andy, it's extreme. It's so unusual. I think you're worth it. I just hope you will. So don't justify. Don't lie to yourself. Don't, well, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong, right up to the line. Flee. Don't flirt with it, because there's good and there's bad. That's not our cue. There's good and there's bad. That's not where we've been called to live. There's good and there's bad. That's not our cue, but rather, what is the wise thing to do? And if you ask that question in this area, if you ask that question in this sensitive, difficult area, you'll never, ever, ever regret it. And you'll be unique, not weird, unique, because you will have set yourself up for success in the most important arena of life, in the arena of your relationships with other people and with your Father in heaven.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move. Don't forget what we're celebrating this month. Your Move now airs on NBC after SNL in Las Vegas. This would not have been possible without the generosity of our podcast listeners. Thanks to you, better decisions are coming to the city that never sleeps.